Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. We are on issue 60, the maiden voyage of what I'm sure will be something Marco Polo-like. We're not going to end up where we wanted to go, but we got there.
I don't know if issue 60 quite qualifies as maiden voyage. I think that was back at number zero.
Maiden voyage of this story arc.
Oh,
we are
okay.
Preparing to venture forth into uncharted waters. Here there be monsters.
Let's attach the phrases as we see fits.
That's what I do. I don't stand on ceremony or vocabulary or context anymore. I'm a free thinker, buddy. I'm the Philip K. Dick of comic book podcasts. I don't know what that means. So there you go.
I think it means you'll go nuts in a few years.
I will, and I'll get some. What was the terminology for the android skin that we used?
Oh, that's right. Oh, wow.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that. So, deconstructing comics. That is the story arc that we are venturing forth on. We're going to be doing it in five parts, as usual. We're going to discuss what really makes a hero tick and a villain tick and the supporting cast.
Tick in the opposite
right,
direction.
Talk.
They tick counterclockwise.
And the supporting cast and the love interests and the families of these characters. Cole and I have been reading comic books collectively for probably, what would you say, 60 years?
100 years.
60, honestly, 60, 70 years of comic book experience?
Easily, yes.
And since we are not psychologists or sociologists, we are going to fight our way through in as close to layman's terms as we can get. Tonight's issue is...
I do want to point out, though, before we really get into the meat of this, that this was actually born out of various conversations that we'd had pre-show, between shows, that sort of thing.
That's where most of them come from.
And I have to say that this... I want to, you know, laud you on this. This is all Andrew's idea.
I do the weird ones. I tend to latch on to the... Cole's very structured. He's like, these are the things that we should be doing. You know, they make a lot of sense. they're right in the vein of what we're trying to do here at Hey Kids Comics. And I'm like, yes, we should do that. And then I go, we should really delve into this. And neither of us have the expertise to do it. But by God, we are going to do it.
Well, it's out there with the Sensing Comics, because we had no idea what we were doing. We just spitballed that one, and it was amazing.
It was great. I love doing it. So we're going to do this. What is the title of this issue?
Well, this arc is titled Deconstructing Comics, and this issue is I Need a Hero.
I Need a Hero.
Because that's what we really need for this episode, this issue.
Yeah, we do. But we're going to have to become our own heroes, which is really what this is about. Because what we want to talk about is what makes a hero. What creates the heroes that you read in the comic books every day? And there are a lot of determining factors there. You know,
yes, there are certainly a tremendous number of drives. You know, one of the most prevailing seems to be guilt.
Guilt, you know, there are four real kind of sinners that I want to touch on tonight, and none of them are Ironwood. I just got finished cutting that last issue, so if you guys listened to it, I hope you appreciated the disclaimer I had to put in the front of it.
It's also a good thing you mentioned the last issue, because I do want to point out, with apologies to Bill Willingham fans everywhere, we completely forgot a book that Steve introduced me to, published by, I believe, Lone Star Press.
Okay.
Called Pantheon, which was just amazing. So if you can ever find any of those, find them.
And also thank you to Steve for being on the show. That was a pretty amazing show to re-listen to. So thank you, Steve, for that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
There are four areas that I really want to touch on tonight. Like you said, guilt is a big one. And some of these are going to overlap. Guilt, revenge, duty, and responsibility. Now, duty and responsibility are to some extent the same thing, but they really aren't. So,
no, they're neighbors.
They're neighbors, and they sometimes overlap. Sometimes, you know, there's a zoning issue. But for the most part, they are separate entities in and of themselves. So let's get into this, now that we've kind of rambled on about what it is. Let's get into this and talk about guilt to start. So how are you feeling about starting with guilt?
I feel terrible about it.
God, I feel awful. I feel awful.
I can't apologize enough. But seriously, guilt seems to be one of the most prevailing. You would think things like duty and honor.
Right.
Or revenge, but oftentimes guilt just seems to, even those who are more driven by the other three often tend to have guilt somewhere in the equation.
They do. They absolutely do. Give me some examples.
The superstar of guilt in many people's minds is going to be Spider-Man.
Right. I agree with that, but I also want to say that it butts against, I mean, if we're looking at quadrants here, I mean, if you want to picture this in your mind, picture four quadrants, picture a square cut into fourths, and you have guilt in the upper left, you have revenge in the upper right, you have duty in the bottom left, and you have responsibility in the bottom right.
And we were going to have guilt in the bottom left, but it guilted us into having it.
Right. It gave us, it batted its big doe eyes at us, and we had to move it up. Guilt and responsibility will often go hand in hand. Because in the case of something like Spider-Man, you have this idea that you have guilt, but out of that guilt is born responsibility. So you feel guilty because you feel responsible for everything, right? I mean, you don't...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then you become apparently responsible because you're guilty.
Right. So you don't only feel guilty because you caused your uncle's death, right? You feel you feel guilty about that. You also feel guilty about the death of Gwen Stacy. You feel guilty about...
See, I'm going to go on a limb here. I will give Peter Parker / Spider-Man Gwen Stacy's death. He can guilt that up till the sun goes down.
Yes. Yes, he can. He was given
because,
a tough choice.
You know, by virtue of her connection to him and the Green Goblin's knowledge and... You know, there's a certain connection there that he can be allowed to feel somewhat guilty. But I'm going to take away the Uncle Ben.
Oh, really?
I'm going to take away Uncle Ben because my feeling is that it's a Luke Skywalker moment. And this is not just because I'm Jedi Cole. I think had he not been goofing around playing superhero, chances are the guy still would have come and mugged Uncle Ben. And he probably would have got shot himself.
No, I agree. But you're not going to be able to tell Peter Parker that.
Oh, no.
I mean, and that's where the guilt comes from. But born out of... What other good examples of guilt can you...
I'm going to challenge you with a big one that occurs to me, because I don't know if it's ever been explored this way.
Okay.
But I think if we want to get into the meat and of the psychology, Superman.
Okay.
There is a certain degree of guilt about being orphaned... In the sense that you're like the sole survivor of, I guess more not orphaning, being an orphan, but being a survivor.
It's survivor's guilt.
Yeah, and I believe that there's a lot of that survivor's guilt behind what drives Superman. If he's going to be the last Kryptonian, he's going to be the best last Kryptonian.
You know, and in a
until others show up.
Well, that's what I was going to say. In a vacuum, it makes total sense because. You know, when you're the last Kryptonian and you have powers and abilities beyond that of any mortal man, just you are Übermensch in every sense of the word. You feel that you want to save, and there's a thing about guilt, and it applies to every single character, every single hero that I've ever read, pretty much. The guilt is something happens. You want to save anybody from feeling that same pain that you felt. You feel guilty. It's the survivor's guilt. You feel guilty for that. But in a vacuum with Superman, it explains why he's all... And I'm going on a limb. I'm following you out there. It's getting creaky. It's getting creaky.
It's a pretty stout limb because it's an ironwood tree.
It's... God damn it. Really? So... He feels so relieved whenever another Kryptonian shows up every 6 months to alleviate some of that guilt that he feels. You
absolutely.
Know, to take some
even
of the
if
load
they're the
off.
Worst Kryptonian ever.
Right. Even if Zod shows up, at least there's another Kryptonian around. Jeez. You know, somebody to take some of the edge off of being the last one. That I you're onto something there. You know, and if you really want to, and I know it's a cipher. We're going to talk about a cipher for every one of these quadrants in the form of Batman. Because you can't. I mean, Batman has survivor's guilt. And it's borne through and shows again in a vacuum due to the fact that he runs, you know, the Wayne home for orphaned acrobats, essentially. So he wants...
Oh, absolutely. Nothing underscores the Batman, the Bruce Wayne guilt, like finding somebody else to share in his guilt.
Exactly.
You know, second the Graysons were in the ground, Bruce Wayne is like all over that kid. Because it's like, oh my God, a kindred spirit.
Right, right.
And he's got skills. He's got like mad skills, so he might be used in the fight.
Let's train him. Yeah. So now...
Let's take this kid whose parents were murdered and take him out in front of the most murderous people in the world.
Exactly.
That's the Bruce Wayne orphan therapy.
It's true. Yes, absolutely true with that. There's just something, you know, and there's guilt about everything with Batman. Batman is, they have explored all four areas of our hero quadrant in great and fantastic detail when you're discussing Batman. But
well, Batman, it just, in a way, Batman becomes this sort of hideous dodecahedron of aspects we don't even have time to talk about.
Right.
If there's a neurosis or a drive in the catalog, he's got one. But he's filthy rich. He can get away with it.
Exactly. I mean, this. Does Batman see a psych? Has Batman ever seen a psychologist? I think he did, didn't he?
I think that maybe Hugo Strange was once sane.
Right.
I think that would be interesting to explore, is to do a retcon, because God knows we love retcons here.
Right.
Or, you know, if it's wide open, I don't know, you know, how much of Hugo Strange's background has ever been explored. But I think that would be kind of fun to suggest that Dr. Hugo Strange was once quite a reasonable man.
Yeah, he definitely, you know, or, yeah, have those sessions.
And then he takes
on
the Batman as a client.
And then he becomes the Batman, because...
Yeah, because he just... Nothing would so ruin a psychiatrist or a psychologist or both.
Well, do you want to?
As having to deal.
Look at this, right? So you want to talk about guilt? Let's talk about the birth of the Avengers in terms of guilt. Loki comes down, gets into one of the only. Thor is probably the most guilty of, or not Thor. Hulk is probably the most guilty. Bruce Banner is probably the most guilty of all heroes. Because he can't.
No, I hadn't really thought about that. But who carries more guilt and shame? I mean, it's worse than, you know, having to come in behind drunken parents or something.
Right.
Because chances are your drunken parents haven't knocked over skyscrapers.
Exactly. And haven't, you know, beat their friends to a bloody pulp or destroyed maces in Arizona, whatever.
So, or left giant footprints everywhere.
So you have this guilt-ridden monster hero, you know, that isn't, that at the time at least, wasn't the smartest of heroes, to say the least. Your brother leaves Asgard, goes to Earth, gets in his head. You know, we've talked about that during our Avengers episode.
Absolutely.
So, out of
so, yeah, you've got a character whose brother goes and gets into mischief and messes things up on Earth. So then you feel like you owe him something.
Right.
And then you have the indomitably guilty Hulk Banner dynamic, who's, you know, the eternal apologist.
That is brilliant. Absolutely. So here comes Thor feeling completely, you know, duty bound out of guilt. Again, there's our overlay to stop his brother from wreaking havoc on Midgard. You have, I don't know if Ant-Man and Wasp really fall into the guilt category per se, at this point, but Iron Man, I think definitely there's a survivor's guilt for Iron Man. I survived
Absolutely.
This horrible atrocity, and I want to use my, I sold weapons. You know, no matter what version of Iron Man you are akin to, it's ultimately been pseudo retcon to, he was a weapons dealer. His weapons did damage. He felt guilty about it, so he went about trying to create a persona.
Well, it became a weapon for peace.
Right. And that's what brought the Avengers together, was in a lot of ways guilt on top of
Absolutely.
Everything
I think that basically Ant-Man and Wasp just got kind of caught up in a guilt storm. But they're tiny, so it would, you know, any storm would buffet them along.
And exactly. They're tiny and wanted to show off. That's right. That's the fifth quadrant, is I just want to show off, which often evolves into other things. But, you know, what drives the hero to become a hero, I think guilt is definitely a big one. You know,
I think you could probably find some guilt within nearly any well-developed hero to some degree. They're all going to have some guilt complexes somewhere.
So guilt, we've discussed. Now, we're going to move on to another. I think that the next one we should probably talk about, since we're talking about guilt, we should probably move into, I think duty would be another a good one to move into.
I think if you wanted to, like, literally look at the opposite side of the coin, because in a sense, when you get right down to the deep psychology of it, guilt and duty are far more related than you might imagine at first pass.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Because any of the heroes that we've talked about so far that have guilt, that guilt has developed into a sense of duty. And I think there's one hero, though, that one type of hero that I really want to talk about when we talk about duty. And that's the military hero. Because when you talk about duty, you talk about guys that do it, or girls. I shouldn't say just guys. There are plenty of girls. Sorry. Sorry, Kelly. Sorry, Lacey. Plenty of heroes that become what they are out of a sense of duty, out of a sense of, I'm going to do this because I can, and it's my job to do it.
Well, certainly the military origin character is going to already have an ingrained sense of duty, because that is generally going to be the primary driving force to have become a part of the military service in the first place.
Right. I think
there is that sense of, you know, putting yourself forward.
I didn't talk about Green Lantern during guilt, and I could have, but that came much later in the Green Lantern continuity.
Rather plays to what I was saying, is that at some point, everybody jumps on the guilt bandwagon.
That's true. The guilt train's coming. Everybody's going to get on it.
You either started there, you're like a charter member, or it's going to find you eventually.
I'm really surprised those card games at the Avengers Mansion didn't just break down into, like, drinking red wine and listening to The Cure and just crying.
Yeah, you just see Jarvis going and grab another one of those boxed wines, because they didn't really want to waste the good stuff for these things.
Remember that name. Remember Jarvis and remember Alfred, because I want to talk about them later. I don't want to talk about them now, but the duty-bound hero, the one that immediately jumps to mind, is Captain America.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, he's going to be your obvious one.
Because I don't really see him. He survived, right? He survived horrific incidences, and he survived being frozen and thawed.
Yes.
But I don't see him as having survivor's guilt. I don't really.
No,
see
oddly that. Enough, he really does, and except in the Avengers,
right,
movie,
right,
where, you know, they had to build in that level of guilt. Now, what's interesting about him, he has that sort of stoic fortitude of a soldier.
He picks up the shield and says, I'm doing this for God and country.
Yeah.
And
what's amazing about him, the service level of which you're speaking, is really underscored in Captain America, because last thing he knew, he was foiling some evil plan, probably imagined in his last moments of consciousness that he had died in the service of his country. He had done the best he could. He'd slugged Hitler a couple of times, the real one.
The real one.
He had fought the Red Skull, he'd fought the other Captain America villains, and fought stereotypical German and Japanese characters with exaggerated features.
Right.
And then, as far as he knew, in his last moments, he had died.
Exactly.
Then suddenly he's resurrected, and he finds himself in a world that he never knew.
And what's the first thing he does?
Yeah, he's like, okay, where's my, can I get a dry suit?
Somebody get me a suit. Did anybody find my shield? I think, here's a, What is that? Is that a TV? Who's on that TV? Is that the Red Skull? Well, I'm back at it. Just put me on a plane. Just make sure it gets over the water this time. I don't want to end up in the water this time. Like, and that's what he did. He immediately went back to work.
You know, just give me some foot powder and some some dry boots, and we're out of here.
I got work to do, guys.
I tell you what, don't even waste time. I'll just go out wet. I'll dry off on the way.
Right, exactly. I'll just hangar bay will be open. I'll air dry. We'll get there.
Air dry.
Just put me in a castle.
Because that's the kind of guy Cap is. He would air dry.
Just put me in a castle. Point me towards somebody to punch in a uniform. We're all good, guys. And
so they're calling themselves Hydra now. Who do I punch?
I don't care what they call themselves.
I've been out of it for decades. I need to punch.
Just punch. Just give me a direction and I'll take it. And I really want to talk about Green Lantern at this point because he's different. He's different in the sense that, okay, so what happened was he was a test pilot. He was flying a test. You know, he was flying an experimental plane. An alien ship crashes. He goes to check it out. There's a dead-ass alien in there. And the dead-ass alien, almost dead-ass alien. And the almost dead-ass alien's like, hey.
Mostly dead.
Mostly dead. It's like, hey.
Was mostly dead.
Hey, here's the most powerful weapon in the universe. What I want you to do is take it, become a space cop. That's your duty now. And pretty much without question, Hal Jordan puts on the ring and goes, all right, here we go. I'm going to OA. I'm on train, and I'm going to become a space cop. And it was all...
For Hal Jordan, it's like, okay, why did you go into military service in the first place? Because you wanted to be a flyboy. Because you wanted to be out there flying them planes. And then you go into... I'm guessing, was he military beforehand?
Was an Air Force test pilot, so I imagine...
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. So, you know, he got in the Air Force so he could fly, because it's cool. I mean, it's like Top Gun. Okay, he has the need for speed. And then all of a sudden, he's confronted with, you know, keeping his exciting job as a test pilot, flying the fastest, most advanced vehicles aircraft man can create.
Right.
Or he can ditch and do anything and go anywhere and meet the Justice League.
Right.
And of course he's going to, it's like literally Avin Sur comes along with a better offer. He was a headhunter.
But it's the best and worst of both worlds because you're taking on this gigantic, and here it is, responsibility. But you're doing it out of duty to something that you, because you're military, because you have that background, you feel that, put aside all the woo-hoo-hoo, I'm flying around in the sky with a ring and fighting aliens and, you know, hanging out with a hippo face guy, put aside all of that stuff, you're doing it out of the duty to the core.
I think that, you know, once the initial shock wore off, it became very apparent that he was a creature of duty, that he was a creature of service.
Yeah.
And to expand that level of service to a galactic level, you know.
Right, right.
Who gets to do that?
Who gets to do that?
Well, Hal Jordan and, of course,
John Stewart.
Guy Gardner. Kyle Rayner.
The list goes on and on and on.
But back then. It was just him.
Back in my day, you only had one Green Lantern.
That's right.
I only had one ring. Can you think of any other duty-bound heroes that really come to mind? I mean, outside of like your Nick Furies and your Captain Americas, your Captain Atom is another big one. You know, any of the guys that come from the military.
A non-military duty-bound hero who actually is sort of the elder statesman for an entire generation of heroes.
Okay.
Professor Xavier.
Ooh.
Because he has a duty to both mankind and mutant kind.
I like where this is going. I see where
he's
going.
He has this tremendous sense of duty to both preserve and protect the emerging Homo superior, but to also he feels a tremendous sense of duty that his rival Magneto lacks, and that is a sense of duty to the world that was. Because he is in a unique position that Cro-Magnon man wasn't with Neanderthal man to
exactly.
say, you know, let's at least, you know, try to coexist. And I guess to some degree, they lacking any ability to reason that out. They did anyway and interbred and pretty much bred out Neanderthal. But at any rate. So I think, you know, if you want to look for a duty-bound character that would fall outside of the obvious, you need to look no further than Professor Charles Xavier.
Yeah, I agree.
And he goes on to instill that same sense of duty into dozens and dozens of other heroes.
He becomes a duty-bound teacher to others. I agree with that. That's awesome. Totally right. So we kind of established anybody with Captain in their name, besides maybe Captain Marvel, but that's because of licensing issues. Pretty much is going to be a duty-bound character, I think. I can't think of...
Yeah, I think also you have... The other thing is a duty to your fraternal order.
Yeah.
And that is manifesting itself in Iron Fist and Doctor Strange.
I like that. I like that. I agree.
So another just kind of twist on the idea of duty that isn't obvious, right?
And it's a short walk. I'm saving revenge for last. You know I am. It's a short walk from duty to responsibility.
Absolutely.
Because once you are duty bound, again, you know, Captain America definitely feels a responsibility to protect sovereign soil. That's his thing, you know. But I think he's an anomaly because he's just Captain America. but there's, once you've established that you have guilt and once you've established that there's a duty, that's when responsibility really kicks in, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because there's varying forms of responsibility. The Spider-Man responsibility, with great power comes great responsibility. That's everybody knows the catchphrase. Everybody knows the hook to that song. and that's a highly important thing for all heroes to establish. Batman has a responsibility to Gotham. He has shown that over and over again. Regardless of the, and we'll talk about this in the next issue, the vast Pangea land bridge like expanse of supervillains that he in and of himself has created. Iron Man now feels a responsibility. He feels a responsibility to the people, to mankind, to make up for what he feels are his mistakes or his law, you know, what he's done wrong. And that's the guilt responsibility tango that you do, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And you also see that guilt-responsibility tango manifest heavily in characters that basically turned over a new leaf.
Right.
Where you have Hawkeye or Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
That's true. Like, I was thinking about Hawkeye. Hawkeye's interesting. Because Hawkeye definitely feels responsible because he was a villain at one point, I think. But I also think Hawkeye feels doubly responsible to Captain America. He's always been portrayed in the comic books as sort of idolized Captain America, wanted to be like Captain America. So I think that he respects and looks up and feels a certain sense of responsibility to carry that ethos with him, whatever he does now.
Well, even I think also to live up to that second chance he was given.
Right, even as far as to lead a team in the West Coast the way that Captain America leads a team in the East Coast. You know, you got a shot at the big leagues, kid, and you were given that shot by the best. Now you have to live up to that responsibility. Black Bolt. Talk about the most heavy responsibility that you can have. That's
well, he has layers of responsibility because as a sovereign.
Right.
He is responsible for the well-being of a people that nobody's supposed to know even exist.
Right.
To the point where he had to enlist the help of his pals over at the FF to move the entire their home from Earth to the moon without benefit of Tom Hanks.
Can you? Or Bruce Willis. I mean, you can't call him Bruce Willis. Who are you going to call? The really interesting thing about him is, in my mind, the way he's been portrayed, and he was portrayed brilliantly by Matt Fraction when the re-release happened and we're going to start seeing more and more of it, is he has all this duty and he has all this responsibility, but he can't speak. He can't give a Captain America speech. He can't lay it bare. He can't do. He has to internalize everything, and that to me.
Well, he has to hire Bruce Willis to actually read a pre.
Well, I don't know if you knew this or not. Bruce Willis. They have a soundproof room on Attilan. That the only two people that can enter that room are Bruce Willis and Black Bolt, because Bruce Willis is the only person that can withstand Black Bolt's voice.
And it was just pure accident that they figured that out.
Go to Attilan, they say. It'll be fun. That's what he says every time he comes out of that room. Die Hard reference. So yeah, for me, that's a big deal. Like, Black Bolt's always been a really cool hero to me because of that. Because he carries so much weight. It's almost like a Hulk version, a Hulk weight on his shoulders.
Absolutely, and he has that perpetual responsibility. There is, you know, there's never a moment that he can shed that.
Right.
It's built in. And that brings up another kind of responsible character, and that's characters like Cyclops.
True, true.
Has to maintain a constant vigil over their own power.
Ghost Rider.
Yes, in fact, I was Ghost Rider was one of the ones that come to mind for me as well.
You know who else falls into this category in a big way is Daredevil, which we haven't talked about much. Because he is, you know, first of all, he's duty-bound because he's a man of law. That's his thing, right? He upholds his own law. He's going to fall into the fourth category pretty heavily, but he upholds the law in his own way, in his own fashion. But he also feels responsible on a street level for Hell's Kitchen, and he's never not done that.
Yeah, absolutely. Even before he really began to utilize his powers in pursuit of justice or, you know, pursuit of being a hero, he was already, you know, even when he's not Daredevil, he's still illustrating a tremendous sense of responsibility to his neighborhood.
And to his people, you know? I mean, that's the thing about Daredevil that I've always liked is he's always been a very responsible person. He's always carried himself very responsibly. So on that, let's move into the ubiquitous fourth category.
I'm going to drop in, because I like to do this from time to time, drop in a character nobody's thinking of.
Okay.
Because, you know, we are talking about heroes, many of them super and some more super than others by virtue of having amazing powers and what have you. But this is a comic book show, and I want to talk a minute about one of my favorite comic book characters who has a tremendous responsibility and falls into several of these other categories, and that's the Marvel's own master of Kung Fu, Shang-Chi.
Oh, here we go with Shang-Chi again. Oh, my God. Okay, so where are we going with Shang-Chi?
Well, you have a character who basically is like a Batman with no detective skills.
Right.
Because he is responsible for maintaining this maximum level of human perfection and maintaining this very Eastern spirituality that he has.
Yes.
And he's also responsible for kind of embracing to some degree the life and world of his Western friends by denying his father all of, you know, everything that his father represents and wants him to be. So he's literally responsible to be ever the antithesis of not only his father, but everything his father wants him to be.
Wow. So there's some duty in there.
So yeah, it's not just, oh, Shang-Chi again.
Yeah, no, you handled Shang-Chi well. I appreciate that. There's some duty and there's some responsibility in there as well. I can definitely appreciate, and guilt for the sins of the father.
Exactly. So he carries a lot of the traditional hero baggage.
So let's move on. Because we're getting there. So let's move on to revenge, because the revenge hero, in a lot of ways, is the most interesting hero, because the revenge hero often is led more by his id than his ego. Most of the heroes we've talked about at this point classically are led by ego. They are reined in. They have a driving force outside of themselves you know, that's making them become what they are. They're internalizing and rationalizing and saying, I feel responsible. I feel duty bound. I feel guilty about something. Therefore, I'm going to make it right. The revenge hero
absolutely
is different.
Your revenge hero has a certain drive that the others will never have to their benefit.
Right.
Because in a sense, the revenge hero has it the easiest because they're actually looking for something that largely may be unattainable.
Right.
They're looking for that salve to whatever led them down the path of revenge. And in many cases, they're never going to find it. And that just continues to drive them further. And in a sense, the revenge-driven character is almost like the superhero equivalent of an addict.
I agree. A couple of the big ones, right? Punisher, and a lot of respects, Daredevil. Because yes. Daredevil's been portrayed many times as, if things don't go well the way I want them to in court, I'm going to handle it on the street, baby. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, have you ever seen The Star Chamber? I'm just saying. Go to Blockbuster, rent it, you'll see what's cutting your way.
That's right. Moon Knight, one of my favorites, is the spirit of vengeance. That's the whole, and he's insane. You know, there's definitely, this is the hero that borders on insane. That's why we have to talk about Batman when we talk about the revenge hero.
Because absolutely.
The only thing, and you said it pre-recording, the only thing that keeps Batman from going insane is his superego. And that's the only thing that keeps a lot of these guys in check. I think the way that they're written is the superego, you know? That feeling that there has to be some overarching restraint. I have to create a set of rules in order to keep myself from going completely over the edge.
Exactly.
Batman. No guns.
Because otherwise, I become the very thing I'm fighting. It becomes a very Nietzschean.
It does. It becomes very, very Nietzschean in its composition. Batman comes immediately to mind. No guns.
Yes.
No guns. I'm going to impose this rule on myself, even at the detriment to if there was a gun laying there and there were 20 people about to die because of a Joker, you know, bomb, and he has the thing and it's not on a dead man switch and all I have to do is pull the trigger, he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because he's back. Because that is the rule that he has put in place for himself. Punisher. No.
And now also people ask, why did you not use the gun? I'm Batman.
Right. That's, he hides behind this, you know, it's the old adage that we did in the alter ego issue. At what point does it stop being, which one is your alter ego? Is Bruce
exactly.
Wayne Batman's alter ego or vice versa? Punisher has always been pretty interesting to me. You know, because when you're, and guys like Scourge and I know he's more of a villain's villain, but guys that mandate for themselves due to the self-imposed rules, no women, no children, leave the innocents, you know, who's to judge? Well, your ego judges, I guess. Those guys always really spark an interest in me. Who's your favorite vengeance hero?
Well, you know, what's interesting, I've never really had a tremendous fondness for the vengeance hero, but I did follow Vigilante because okay. It spun out of Teen Titans and the way Hello Larry spun off of Different Strokes.
Right.
Only better.
Yeah.
And lasted longer. I've just been waiting for 59 issues for a Hello Larry reference. Jeez.
Of course you have. Where's DC Cab at? Can you spin up some DC Cab, you jerk?
We'll have a DC Cab reference eventually.
All right.
When I deem it necessary.
So Vigilante.
But yes, Vigilante was sort of DC's Punisher. And it was, you know, same sort of dynamic, a revenge-driven hero. And what was interesting about it was, I don't know, I'm sure they kind of tackled this at some point. They almost had to have in the Punisher. But what happens when you're wrong?
Yeah.
As the self-appointed judge, jury, and executioner. And so as a district attorney, Adrian Chase suffered a Punisher-like loss, decided to, you know, take it on himself to go out and fight crime the big gun way.
Right.
One of the early stories, like third or fourth issue, he goes after this guy who's been let out of jail after all these years from some heinous crime. And he feels like, okay, this guy's got to be punished. And what follows is just this pitched battle where his adversary isn't attacking him out of any compulsion other than self-preservation. He's served his time. He has contrite
right
in his condition, and he just wants to be left alone and to live whatever's left of his life and just be nobody.
Right.
And ultimately, that's this confrontation he has early into his career, which really colors a lot of where that character would go later. And it was an interesting thing to tackle early on because it's something that doesn't often get touched.
Right, right. Daredevil goes through that a lot. They've done a good job with that. They don't often do it with Punisher because he kind of sets his own moral code and disposition.
Well, that, and most of the time he doesn't have a chance to verbally engage his adversaries. He's pretty much killing them from reasonable distance.
Right. He's what we call spray and pray. He's just over here lighting them up. I want to ask you a question. We're getting there, okay? But I want to ask you a question because I think it's moral. There's a moral implication to certain books, certain comic books. And no one does more with the moral implication of heroes than Alan Moore. So I wanted to ask you, and I've been waiting on this, and I know I'm not catching you off guard, but I'm catching you off guard.
Yeah.
I want you to give me a rundown, and keep in mind, we only have like 10 minutes left, of how you feel all of these things play into The Watchmen.
That's a very good question, because certainly I think you can apply duty later in his career to the comedian.
Right.
You can certainly apply, I think, everything to Ozymandias.
Okay.
Because, in a sense, as the self-described smartest man in the world,
right,
you have a character who has made a life out of being able to figure things out. When he determines the best way, the only way, to save mankind from itself, he bears nothing but guilt because his mind cannot find a better solution than the one. So it goes even beyond the guilt of being single-handedly murdering millions. It is also bearing this guilt of not being able to do better by mankind than that solution.
Right.
He's driven by that sense of duty to mankind and to peace and harmony. He definitely has all of these aspects where he's driven by nearly anything you've got out there. You know, Night Owl is an interesting thing. He's driven, I think, by a sense of duty to a vision of his hero. His
okay.
duty is to the memory of the original Night Owl.
Right.
Or his exploits, anyway. The vision or the kind of what he with the original Night Owl, what the Minutemen represented, his duty is to that, to being out there on the street, fighting the good fight, and being something more than you are. Silk Spectre was out of a sense of duty to her mother, which, you know, was also couched in guilt. And Rorschach, driven very heavily by a misguided sense of guilt, I believe.
And duty, I think.
And duty, yeah. I think it's that misguided sense of guilt that created a sense of duty.
Okay. Kind of insane guilt. Guilt
yes.
that drove him insane within the concept, within the construct of his own ego.
Absolutely.
And Vigilante is pretty much just, or the comedian is pretty much just insane, right? I mean,
well, as I said, I think he's later in his career, he's driven by a sense of duty to his country. Again, a very misguided sense, because in the guise of duty to his country, he can be just as crazy and awful and terrible as he's ever been, only more so. It's literally sanctioned. So in a way, duty
yeah.
gives him an excuse to himself.
Right. I agree.
It's not even really a sense of genuine duty. It's just a sense of using duty as a tool to literally be sanctioned. He's literally being given permission to be terrible. And then, of course, Dr. Manhattan, that's a tough nut to crack because he ceased to really genuinely be human.
True. True. He became the other.
And I think that he operates mainly out of a sense of duty to science, to knowledge. He has a duty more to the cosmos than anything else.
Right. Right. Here's the thing. There's a guy we haven't talked about at all tonight because he defies this, I think. And you could piece a little bit together here and there, but the way that he's been written, I think he defies most of this, and that's Reed Richards. And I think Reed Richards kind of falls into the same category as Dr. Manhattan, but Dr. Manhattan takes it to a whole nother plane, no pun intended.
No, I don't know. Dr. Manhattan, I think he has this sort of sense of, I think the one piece of humanity that remains in the way he's written is guilt.
Yeah.
Because he does tend to dwell on loss and how his existence has affected others. So what glimpses were given into his psyche, I think the only vestige of humanity that remains, oddly enough, is guilt.
Yeah, I think Reed Richards is the same way because the only thing...
Oh, absolutely. Reed has tremendous guilt.
He led his family into space and turned them into monsters.
That's right, and he's especially for Ben. Because he spent a long time trying to find some cure for Ben.
Right, right. I agree.
And then when he does, Ben throws it back in his face.
Right.
Goes right back to where he was.
Okay, so what did we learn tonight, Cole?
Superheroes are pretty screwed up.
Right? Superheroes are as screwed up as we are. I think I'll go out on a limb, and I'm going to say the most prevalent defining force in a superhero is guilt. I think
I don't even think that's really having to go too far out on a limb, but you're absolutely right.
Well, I had never, before tonight, I had never thought about it that way.
I know. I mean, there were your obvious ones, like your Spider-Mans and your Batmans, but until we started to really chip away at this, and this was the whole point, this is why, this was a concept that Andrew came up with quite a while back, and we've had so many other things get in the way of broaching this one, and also I think we just wanted to have time to just let it mull around a while. I don't think, you know, certainly going in, the whole, you know, division of labor that we've done here, breaking the drives down into quadrants didn't exist from the outset.
No.
But that seemed to be the perfect approach to discovering exactly what drives the key factor, I think, becomes guilt in so many of them.
Exactly.
Even if it's not necessarily what drives them, it is certainly a major factor in their psyche.
I totally agree with that, and I'm amazed.
You can layer that guilt because you have Batman who has the guilt, the survivor's guilt. He has the sort of responsibility guilt, and then as his presence turns Gotham into this hideous dark carnival of the soul. Embodied in his rogues gallery, there is even further guilt that he's responsible for.
It's a spiral. It's a total. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Here we are. End of the show. First issue in a new arc. I think it went well.
I can't imagine it having gone better, and I'm already just, I can't wait to really get into the dark side of things and delve even further into villains than we ever have before.
And you know what's funny? There's going to be a lot of the same thing, I think. When I'm thinking about it now, we're going to get into it, but when I'm thinking about it now, I think there's going to be a lot of the same as far as like the driving factors.
Well, and one of the things, you know, we hinted at, like the, oh, look what I can do, or look at me type of drive, which was sort of a fifth element, as it were, that we didn't really go into because it wasn't as psychologically vital as the others. But I think there's a lot of that kind of prideful drive. And
yeah.
You're going to see a lot more of that in villains. And also that's an aspect of comic psychology we're going to delve into all by its lonesome in a future arc.
Okay. Plugs, JediCole.com. Get out there. Check out the new stuff. Does Catherine have a new one yet, or is it coming still?
We don't have a new... What'd you think? Because we just haven't gone to see anything lately.
Right.
But there are several films that we're looking at. But do check out What'd You Think? Because it's a lot of fun if you've seen the movies.
It's so much fun.
You can kind of get some insights on what other people thought. And It's just a fun show in general. And of course, for conventions in Texas, when this airs, it'll already have come and gone, but I'll be at a convention the weekend we're recording this. But if you're looking at conventions all over the state of Texas, go to Convention Awareness Project Texas, which is conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.org. Or no, blogspot.com, rather.
Right, or Cap Texas, if you're still.
Cap in Texas, yeah. And, of course, you can find Andrew and myself and Mrs. Jedi Cole and other crazy characters, including Rick the Goot Gutierrez at United States of Geekdom at unitedstatesofgeekdom.com.
We're getting ready to record a new episode of that about all the ghost shows that are on TV right now. Like, Catherine and I are going to have a hell of a good time doing that one.
And so, also, I want to give a shout-out to a tremendous friend of everything, Jedi Cole Universe, and a tremendous contributor to everything that we do here and everything else, is, of course, Bobby Blakey.
Oh, yes.
You can visit Last Stop Comic, LastStopComic.com, and see his ongoing and now back in the saddle series, Last Stop, which is chock full of toilet humor because it's about a couple of aliens who run a toilet in space.
Which is awesome.
And also check out the reviews section where you can see his Doug the Gorilla and read the reviews of different movies. Most recently, apparently, Riddick.
Riddick. So, thank you all for joining us. I implore you all to really think hard about what makes your favorite heroes tick and see if you can get in their heads. I think it was during our annual that we talked a little bit about that with the X Factor episode that Josh talked about and really delving in and getting in there and really seeing what does it for them. Beyond that, I'll end it like I always end it. Buy, collect, and enjoy comics. If you're not going to buy them, Starman implores you to go to your public library and pick them up from there. They got a really good selection. Thank you, Cole, for joining me on this most recent of journeys.
I have been anxiously awaiting this one.
And we explored pretty thoroughly the ego in this one. Join us next week when we explore the id. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
And we will see you next week.